Beware, spoiler phobes, we're all wearing silly man suits. This week, we wake up in a splinter timeline and have to guide the artifact back to the portal in honor of Donnie Darko's 15th anniversary Director's Cut re-release. It's the 15th anniversary somehow, even though Donnie Darko was released in 2001 and it's currently 2017. But maybe that and the water spears growing out of our chest are what is supposed to tip us off that something's not quite right with the universe. So, after we check in with Neil for Game of Thrones news, we'll delve into Donnie Darko and some of our favorite time travel properties. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very... Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I could time travel to any time and place, I would go to the American West in the 1880s, because I think as a Gonzalez, I have a slightly better chance of surviving there than the other places I'd like to be in the 1880s.
I know. I love how Dave and I, oh, sorry, I'm Joanna Robinson, and like Dave, I had to consider my, non-white maleness when considering time travel. But I'm going to pick, 1920s London so I could be an intrepid female detective, which is what I've always wanted to be.
And I'm Neil Miller. And if I were to time travel, I would go deep into the future because that's what I'm most curious about. I know what happened in the past. I want to see what happens like 200, 300, 400 years into the future. I may end up just floating in space because Earth is gone, but, you know, I think it'd be worth it. It'd be worth
checking out. Well, honestly, we're all going to end up floating in space because if you're traveling back in time but not spatially going anywhere,
the Earth is not only rotating
on its axis but around the sun, and that changes incrementally depending on gravity wells. Anyway,
that's an excellent point.
But I like your answer, Neil, because like I was sitting here thinking like you, Neil, as our token white male, you could travel anywhere
and not be
in trouble. But maybe in the future that won't be the case.
Oh yeah, you never know. Although I can't remember which comedian said it, but it really is as a white guy, you could travel pretty much anywhere in time and be just fine.
Yeah.
Yep. No, and I also like that out of like Joanna and I picked something where we could go back and like accidentally screw up all of human history. You could basically go to the future and do whatever you want. You're like an unknown quantity in the fourth dimension if you're going back into forward.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's great. It's a great idea.
It's going to be pretty sweet. Also, Joanna, what's stopping you from being a female detective now?
Gosh, I do it in my own sad TV clues way. I really do want to be an intrepid lady detective. I would wear the jauntiest hats you can't even believe. So
I feel like you're just a jaunty hat away from being like the Nancy Drew of TV blogging.
Yeah, I like it. All I need
get
is
a hat.
Get a hat. All right.
Like maybe like a no, I don't know if jaunty and Carmen Sandiego hat crossover. You could have a lot of different hats for all the different cases. That could be your thing.
Carmen Sandiego's hat is too like dramatic. You need like a fedora.
Like it's too Indiana Jones.
Is jaunty. A cloche hat is jaunty. Anyway, I could talk about hats, but this is not a hat cast. This is
a podcast. It is a podcast that's about other pop cultures while we're waiting for Game of Thrones to come back. The way we hear from you, our listeners, when we're not, meeting you like we did in Austin for a South by Southwest live show, is through our iTunes reviews, which Joanna is going to read some, or one, for us now?
I will read this one. I will not read the one that has the iron fist emoji that Dave hates so much. I'll read a different one.
Kudos to whoever left that one, because it made Joanna very happy.
Yeah, thanks, Cat5523. This is Welcome Distraction, 5 stars. I originally found this podcast while looking for more discussions on Game of Thrones, and have been pleasantly surprised to find myself enjoying the off-season episodes even more. I've had a rough past 12 months, and your shows have always have helped take my mind off of things. So thanks so much so. Sorry, I'm bungling this. So much so that I find myself listening to discussions of shows and movies I'll never see. Thank you, Joanna, Dave, and Neil.
Wow, we've been very therapeutic lately.
I know, I like those reviews. I'm going to read Cat's anyway. Cat5523 says, love these guys, 5 stars. Been listening since season 5, and they have become an essential part of my Game of Thrones viewing. Oh, yeah, yeah, this is an interesting thing. I'm actually worried we're going to lose listeners this season on Game of Thrones, because this is what Cat says. I'm one of those people who love the book spoiler discussions, but discovered last season that I don't like production spoilers, so I might have to wait until the upcoming season is over to listen. I love the off-season tour, even when they are discussing a property I couldn't care less about, parentheses, F.E. Fist, as the discussions are always lively and entertaining. Keep up the good work, y'all. Exclamation mark. So, this is an off-air discussion to have, but I've been hearing more and more from people who are feeling weird about production spoilers. So we might work out some sort of
strategy
section. We'll strategize
around this. Actually, maybe what we could do is we'll just continue the off-season tour through the season, and then we'll just start reviewing the shows after the season's over. That's a terrible idea.
That's an awful idea. Yeah, this is why we're going
to
discuss it.
So when they go to iTunes, they're like, oh, good, that Harry Potter and the Cursed Child review I've been looking for.
Guys,
this is why we're
going to
talk about this off air.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, you, of course, can leave your reviews on iTunes and let us know your concerns about, spoilers, production, otherwise, how we can improve the show going forward. And then also, just as long as you rate it 5 stars, you could really put whatever you want in there, and we'll take a look at it. 5 stars, say anything. That's my motto. Should be your motto, too. Guys, we've got one more, sometimes large, sometimes small, meta segment. With Neil's, we talked about this already. Neil, what do you have for us this week?
All right, guys. A couple of reminders, of course. Con of Thrones in at the end of June. We're going to be there. I promise that I'm going to buy my plane ticket soon. The update on Neil plane ticket watch is that I still have not bought it, but I will. I promise. I'm going to be there. I will drive if necessary.
I didn't know that we were on a plane ticket watch for you.
Apparently, I mean, this is happening because I've mentioned it. I just now realized that I mentioned it like 4 weeks in a row that I haven't bought my plane ticket yet, and I still haven't done it. So
for big nerds, big nerds, not you medium sized nerds, for the like behind the scenes nerds, Con of Thrones added David Peterson, who's the language creator, as a special guest, and Tommy Dunn, who's the weapons master. And Tommy Dunn has been on like a lot of the behind the scenes, cool behind the scenes videos. He's amazing. So
I want to drink with that guy.
Yeah, he looks like he could drink you under the table. So, Con of Thrones, it's happening.
Cool. Also, don't forget to take our survey, wondery.com/survey. I have no idea what the survey is about this month. It might still be about men's soap. But, take it anyway. Help us out so that we can get you some good ads for brands that apply to your demographic segment.
Ooh, like hats?
Maybe some hats. Yeah. Actually, what I think everybody should do is go to the survey and start putting in like stuff like, yes, more hats. Or I was listening to a podcast earlier today on one of the ESPN shows, and they started advertising for Mini, the Mini car brand. So like, let's start putting in like Mini, and let's see if we can get them to give me like a free car.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All interesting.
Right. I mean, let's strategize this here, guys. Anyway,
I think we should just start getting all takers, but getting paid really well for it. So like, who's advertising for Breitbart and Fox News these days?
It could
be us.
But see, Neil, now that you've like told our listeners they have the power to control maybe what you know, brands we have to advertise, they might start messing with you.
All right. Well, now that you know you have control over our ads, go to wondery.com/survey. Use that control. You know me. I would love you to find things that you could, you know, buy. But if your goal is to make Neil, Joanna, and I read ridiculous ad copy for ridiculous products, I'll try all your ridiculous ads stuff.
Yeah.
My shaving is really up to game with my Harry's. I didn't think that was going to happen. There's one for free Harry's.
Nice. Okay, moving on to the next thing in our in my segment. There's some Game of Thrones news. A couple of different things. One, we got a new short HBO teaser that involved characters from all of the very popular HBO shows doing the sound that the HBO logo makes, which is sort of stupid. Anyway. But we got a couple of interesting looks at costumes. First was Daenerys Targaryen, who has a very nice black and red Targaryen number, which I'm super into. And this is sort of the year, I think, for like Targaryen fans, especially like book fans who love like the history of the Targaryens, or like I know a lot of people who play like the Game of Thrones games online, and they're like, Targaryen is like the house that rules, because all of its symbolism and stuff like that is, you know, dragons and red and black and fire and shit. So this is going to be the year where we finally get to see Daenerys don the symbols of her house, because she's returned to Westeros. So I think that's pretty cool. Did you guys have any thoughts on Daenerys's red and black?
Well, one other
gear?
Additional thought. Have we talked about the Sitting on the Thrones teaser?
That's what he's. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah. No, there's another teaser. I put a link in the show notes. There's a different.
Yeah, you're talking about the
yeah, the HBO thing.
Right, but I also think we haven't spoken since we got the Sitting on the Three Different Thrones teaser.
Oh, I feel like
the White Walker eye.
Yeah, I thought we talked about that last week, but maybe.
No, we didn't. Remember, Neil, we were gonna maybe talk about it on the Batgirl episode that we.
Oh, that's right. Anyway, so yeah, so Daenerys has got some new digs, and for anybody who was curious about that initial, what they call the sit down trailer,
Cersei's ice cool fresco breath.
Right. But Daenerys is totally a Dragonstone.
Yes.
But it looks like that's a room in Dragonstone we haven't seen before. We really haven't seen Dragonstone a lot. We saw Melisandre burn people on the shores of Dragonstone. We've seen Davos in the jail of Dragonstone. And we saw like that really cool like war room, council room that Stannis had, that had like the carved out table. Remember
that?
Yeah,
and that was that also the leech burning room?
Yeah, they did. Well, they did some leech burning in that room, yes. So that was the that was Dragonstone then. I have a feeling Dragonstone will look a little bit different now, because I think they're actually filming it in a different location. But it's cool because it's like this castle that is sort of carved out of this island, and so there's a lot of like rocks and like weird jagged hallways, and so I think that was actually pretty cool of them to put into the teaser. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, what they did is they did not use any show footage. It looks like, you know, just promo footage, right? And that's a way that HBO can avoid, like, giving, you know, because they know that we Storm of Spoilers or, like, Intrepid Lady TV detectives will pour over every frame to be like, here is this. Like, this is what this means. And that,
Jon,
you know,
Snow's in the background of that battle shot.
Yeah. And this way they can, like, you know, sidestep all of that, right? And so.
Well, were you guys part of the, are there things reflected in the Night King's eye at the end? Crazy Town debate?
No, worse than that was Alt Shift X, which is a YouTube channel that does, like, great Game of Thrones, like, explainers from the books, but, like, in terms of crackpot theories, I'm not sure. And he insists that that's 1-1, not the Night King, based on the nose. And I'm like, I th- think it's the Night King. Like, the whole thing is that these are the monarchs we will be seeing next season, and the Night King is one of them. A reanimated, a zombie giant is not.
I will say this, though. I mean, I looked at it very closely, as is my wont, and I almost had myself talked into it. I was like, well, that nose is different.
But they've changed the prosthetics on that character every single season. So
that's a fair point.
I'm not prepared to call to
what
say
I'm
that
saying
that
is
that a zombie giant.
You're probably right. But in my crazy heart of hearts, I can get there. But you're probably right.
Okay.
As is the case with most things, you're probably right. And I have talked myself into something ridiculous, but I'm okay with that. That's pretty much how it goes.
But so, okay. Yeah. So we saw Dragonstone, which, you know, so that's a spoiler of sorts. Like we saw Danny on the ocean, but unless you've been paying attention to production spoilers, you didn't know necessarily that she was going to go to Dragonstone. And they still didn't say it. It's just like the rest of us were like, P.S. That's Dragonstone, obviously.
The question I would say is like, if you're not the kind of person who's paying attention, would you know that that's Dragonstone if we didn't just tell you?
No.
Yeah, probably not. So, spoilers.
But even Entertainment Weekly said it, so it's a spoiler that HBO can't possibly like care about having out there. So.
So it's not our fault.
Nope. Not this time.
Take that Weiss and Benny off.
But So Daenerys in her new clothing on her new throne. All good.
To being very, very much a Targaryen. The other thing that is shown in this new one, which was put out, I think this came out today, of these HBO characters in costume singing the HBO
static I think it aired on Sunday. And then
It aired before Big Little Lies.
Yeah, and then it circulated online yesterday.
Is that we saw Bran in sort of a new brown furry costume, which kind of jives with the stuff we saw of Maisie Williams in a more brown thing. So I think it's, if we're reading into costumes, which like, why wouldn't we read into costumes? It's sort of our thing. That the brown is very Winterfell Starky. Like it's very easy for me to connect the dots to, oh, this means that both Bran and Arya will end up back at Winterfell. Probably very quickly. Does that make sense? Or am I crazy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to have to get there pretty quickly. They don't have that many episodes left.
And that's true. Everybody's getting on Littlefinger's Magic Mockingbird.
We also see Sansa's wearing furs, but that's not necessarily new, but it's a slightly different outfit than what we've seen her in before.
It's that same dark one from last year, right?
But I think she's got like that old terrible necklace she had at the Aerie back on. Anyway, Sansa's in the promo. Jamie's in the it's sort of like Littlefinger, the forces of Stark and Littlefinger working on her at once, if you want to read too much into things. So yeah, so we've got Bran in the brown furs, Sansa wearing that necklace. Jamie Lannister's there looking at his hand, and then we see Daenerys, you know, in the black and red again some more. I think those are all the Game of Thrones people in that promo.
There's a quick shot of Tormund, but he's just being
Tormund. He's just got some blood on his face or something.
Right.
He's fine, Neil. He's fine. He'll be fine. It's fine.
I am not panicking.
Okay.
Here's the next item of news, the other Game of Thronesy thing, is something that could have people panicking, which is I don't know if you guys heard of this Ghost in the Shell movie that came out last week. Have you heard? I don't know. Anyway, this gentleman who is not Asian, Pilo Asbeck, who we know from Game of Thrones, plays Euron Greyjoy. He was doing his little press tour for Ghost in the Shell, and instead of talking about whitewashing, he got to talk about Euron Greyjoy, which probably for the best, let's be honest. And someone did ask him from MTV News just how much shit Euron is going to start in this next season, and his response was enough to get satisfied. Good and satisfied. So, I don't know what that means. He also told another outlet, Miami.com, that he is sort of looking forward to the break. And he's like, I may be going to do some Game of Thrones. Maybe I won't. I'm looking forward to seeing my wife and daughter again. I don't know. Do we think Euron's going to make it through season 7? Like, he might just like start some shit and then get killed.
Yeah, I mean, enough to get satisfied. Euron's, it feels like it's, like Ollie all over again, where like people don't like this character, so they're gonna kill him.
Which is like, unfortunate because this character is sort of rad. They messed it up.
Yeah. They hired a good actor to do for a good part. Well, same thing that happened to Alexander Siddig. They hired a good actor for a good part that they messed up. Or, that's harsh. Didn't have room for, let's say.
Not the time for Euron.
So hopefully he does start some shit, but I will be interested. I would say I haven't begun putting together my like death index list, but I would say Euron's probably up there of like fairly prominent like B-level characters who might not make it through season 7.
Yeah, well, I guess I mean when you know we should definitely do like a look forward episode or two, which we certainly will. But the question is, like, if you kill off a bunch of bad guys in season 7, then is season 8, the even shorter season 8, all of the good guys up against the Night King at long last, or what, you know?
Right.
Is season 7 finally convincing other people that there are ice zombies, and then season 8 is cool, now that you believe me, let's go fight them. Like, is that what we're gonna see?
Right. I mean, that sounds logical.
Those are my two sentence recap of the rest of Game of Thrones. Season 7, hey guys, no, for real, there are ice zombies. Season 8, let's go fight them.
Let me say this. That is the tropiest, most standard way that this could end. My sincere hope is that there's some kind of real significant surprise craziness that could happen in these last two seasons. Because if that's how it goes, that'll be fine, I guess. But that's kind of boring. It doesn't feel very Game of Thrones-y to me. You know? Yeah.
But I don't
like the crumbling of all the house things. It's like, this is the end of, we're going to settle all human scores. And then next season, it's about like literally who's going to survive. They feel like they've been in a world of survival all the time. Now the show's in the, like, putting them in a world of survival.
I will say this without majorly spoiling what we know. Here's what that like three monarch teaser tells me. Mm-hmm. And the Knights, so four monarch, right? Cersei, Daenerys, Jon Snow, Night's King. It feels like the way you win the Game of Thrones in Westeros right now, I mean, if Cersei would just let them all have their own little seats of power, then maybe they could just stay in their little corners. But she's not going to let that happen, nor, I think, is the conquering hero Daenerys. So the way... Hold on, I'm going to sneeze. The way that you win that game, right, is 2-1. So it feels like Cersei's in trouble, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've predicted since the end of last season that Cersei she's gone down the path that ends with not being in charge anymore, one way or the other.
Right. And you win or you die, said somebody. Who knows?
Someone once remembers anymore. That. Yeah.
That was her.
So it's Ned or someone.
No, that was her. It was literally Cersei.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
He was joking. Somewhere.
Oh, sorry.
Just not being good at joking.
Don't worry, guys. We have a long time to get ready for Game of Thrones and get our Game of Thrones banter back on.
All those inside jokes and little pieces. We'll remember all of them.
Word. Okay, I have one more thing in my ever expanding segment, which is the Preacher 2 teaser, which came out right before we sat down to record this, and it looks bonkers, and that's all I have to say about it, but I am curious to hear what you guys had to say.
We're finally on the road. It looks like they're being hunted by some, I don't want to spoil a ton of preacher for everybody, religious people, which is hinting at another villain that maybe we saw in Shadow one episode of season one that was really frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's more of everything we liked just
on
the road.
Didn't we meet the dude from hell last year?
That's not who he's talking about.
That's not who I'm talking about. Yeah, we're going to have the Saint of Killers.
Saint of
he's
Killers.
Definitely
yeah,
in this
right.
trailer. So he's
Graham McTavish.
Chasing our heroes on a road trip. Yeah, they really play on that road trip side, which is good because that's where I thought it was going to start. And, you know, season one got there, but I'm ready. I'm ready to get to the meat.
My reaction is a better way inflection to use there. My reaction is it looks more fun than season one. And season one was fun in places. But this looks like even more fun and less like Dominic Cooper sitting in a church wondering what it's all about. which is fine because, you know, he cuts a striking figure, but I think this could be even more fun than Bunkers. So season two, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
All right. That is the end of We Talked About This Already. As we move into the meat of this week's episode, which will be time travel through the way of Donnie Darko, the 2001 movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal as a depressed teenager who is forced into some sort of weird time loop. Neil, this is your first time seeing this movie. So I want to first say to everybody that we're just going to go all the way on Donnie Darko. It's a prestige director's cut re-release. You probably should have seen it by now. We totally assigned this to you on homework last week. But for some reason, you don't want to be spoiled. Don't listen to the Donnie Darko part. But Neil,
yes, this,
Donnie Darko, how was your first experience?
Interesting, I guess. So,
well, I guess, first of all, did you watch the theatrical cut or did you watch the director's cut?
I watched the theatrical cut, and I will say this, for years. I mean, this came out in, what, 2001?
Can we pause really quickly because that's true?
Yes.
But why are we celebrating the 15th anniversary now?
Oh, is that a thing? Is that
yeah,
why
that's
this
why
is a thing?
That's why we're even talking about Donnie Darko. Is that it? Like, was returning to theaters for a 15th anniversary. What I'm saying is, they did it a few months too late. In fact, it
no,
came
it
out
did
in
it like a year too late.
Yeah, I mean, it came out in January 2001. But like, if you're still gonna like be within the, like, if they'd done it in December 2016, I would still be like, okay, that's still 15th anniversary.
Oh, it's in the 15th year. You make an excellent question. Maybe there is some time travel involved.
Yeah, I was about to say.
The release of Donnie Darko. Maybe it was actually released in January of 2002, but we were all sent back in time because Frank wanted us to relive 9/11.
Whoa.
Dark. Because that is very Donnie Darko. It's some dark shit. It's very edgy. And I did think one of the funniest things that someone, because I tweeted that I was going to start watching it the other night when I started watching it. And then my second tweet about 5 minutes into the movie was, because apparently I tweet during movies. Sorry, guys. I was at home. No one was around. But my second tweet was, wait, people like this movie? To which someone responded, people who walk through... what's that store called?
Hot Topic.
Hot Topic.
Yeah.
Really dig this movie. And I thought that was pretty on point. It's very broody. It's very, it's fairly dark, and grim. But also, I was just sort of delighted a little bit with all the crazy actors who are in this and asking myself, like, wait, why is Drew Barrymore in this? Like, what is her character all about? And, like, what's...
Sure, peak of his career, Noah Wiley. What?
Yeah, like, what's going on with Noah Wiley in this movie?
Dr. Carter, what are you doing?
The Swayze's in this movie,
Swayze's
as like a Oh, okay. I think what threw me off, because it's a very strange movie, but I actually don't think it's as like obtuse as a lot of people have sort of intimated to me over the years. Because I think that was always the one thing that I had heard about Donnie Darko is it's so weird, man. And it's not actually that weird. It's a pretty straightforward story.
Okay. Wait. I'm throwing a yellow card down. I don't know. Point of order. Cool. Explain to me then.
Yes.
What happens to Donnie Darko, Neil Miller?
So hold on. Let me recalibrate. Right. So Donnie Darko gets caught in a time loop, like Dave said at the beginning. He gets caught in a time loop where he begins seeing and communicating with some sort of time spectrum. Is my idea is like there's like if Time Lords were like an ethereal thing, or like they were like the bubble things from the abyss, and they lived out in the open, that's what he's interacting with. Like time is speaking to him about thing, and it's trying to warn him. It's trying to be like, don't take your girlfriend to the weird lady's house, otherwise she's gonna die. And then, you know, your mom's going to die, your sister's going to die, all this shit's going to, everybody's going to die. It's going to be terrible. The world, your world is going to end. But then I guess when he ultimately figures it out, he just dies.
So that's not, I mean, I.
Is that not that what the movie's about?
That is a fine reading of the text.
About halfway through, yeah.
That's a fine reading of the text you were presented with. Honestly,
sure.
I'm not saying, you know.
Wait, so
but
what
like,
the hell's Donnie Darko about?
Okay, so Donnie Darko is about how there are these things called, well, we'll call it a splinter timeline, let's say, or an alternate timeline. And so the movie starts, so before even the engine drops in into his house, Donnie, like the Darko family and the rest are on an alternate timeline. So this engine drops in their house and then there's like a problem with that because that engine and like the real version of that engine, which is still attached to a plane, both exist in the same reality. And that makes the reality unstable. And so all these figures in Donnie's life are putting him on a path to try to get him to correct, the splinter universe. So. Like, contrary to what you think, Frank is not trying to keep him from taking Gretchen to, like, the flooding of the school. Frank gets Donnie to flood the school because the school floods. Donnie, like, gets to walk home with Gretchen. That's why he starts dating Gretchen. Mm-hmm. The fire, Frank gets Donnie to start the fire because the fire happens. Then his mom's out of town because his mom's out of town. They throw a party because the party happens. They go to Grandma Death's house, and because Grandma Death's house happens, then Gretchen dies. And because Gretchen dies, Donnie is inspired by his love and his grief to write the timeline, which he does by opening a portal in the sky and dropping a different engine. I'm not kidding you that this is what Donnie Darko is about, by dropping a different engine down. And also there, so like Frank is like a ghost, a dead person who's like guiding Donnie, but like his teachers, like Noah Wiley and Drew Barrymore with like the cellar door and the time travel book and all this stuff, are these like living figures that are also guiding Donnie. Everyone's guiding Donnie to figure out how to fix the splintered timeline. And the way he fixes the splintered timeline, I guess, is by sacrificing himself. But everyone wakes up and sort of remembers what happened, sort of, in the splintered timeline.
Oh, and that's why they all have an itch on their face at the end.
Well, the itch is like Frank being like, oh, my eye that got shot elsewhere in time.
Oh, God, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Donnie Darko is weird. It's not
so
weird.
So I had it
it's
actually
like,
in reverse. So it's but, actually but about like, the, it's about time repairing itself.
But like, given the information you were presented with, yours was a fine reading of the text. What I'm saying is Donnie Darko is this like stupid, crazy, weird thing that requires homework to understand what Richard Kelly really wanted you to get.
Right. Was there like
from
a comic book that came out with it that explained all this?
Well, here's the thing. So it underperformed in 2001, largely because a lot of the cuts allowed it to be ambiguous about what happened at the end, because you don't get to see pages of this time travel book that actually explain the things, et cetera, et cetera. And something's out of sequence.
Oh, I thought he just wrote, yeah, I didn't get the letter. Like, the letter made no sense to me.
Yeah, the director's cut comes in, and then some of the actual pages of the book about time travel went up on the website. And that's when we sort of realized what Richard Kelly was trying to say in this movie. When really, I think what you described is basically how I also interpreted Dunkirk the first time I saw it.
Definitely. Yours, Neil, your reading is like, is what any sane person would get from that movie. But Richard Kelly's like, yeah, that's not, and that's why the director's cut exists. But the director's cut is just like, doesn't make it better. And I think, yeah, in the director's cut, like in, when time repairs itself or what have you, like Swayze's character kills himself because he like, anyway, there's just like a bunch of extra stuff that you're like,
because
he's a kiddie porn person. So what, yeah, did the director's cut come out in 2002? Is that what this is?
2004.
This isn't even the 50th anniversary of the director's cut. What's happening? Anyway, I watched it.
Well, maybe we're not in the right timeline.
I watched it in college, cause a friend of mine like loved it. So she showed it to me on like DVD or something like that. I think like the year after it came out or something, pretty close to when it came out. And then we would quote it all the time. Like, I'm beginning to doubt your commitment to sparkle motion, or how exactly does one suck a fuck, or like all these sort of lines like become, I don't know. Like it just became this like very quotable, fun movie going experience. But Neil, I can definitely see how like, a little over 15 years later, watching it, you'd be like, I don't get it, guys.
I will say, why? There are a couple things that I realized in this whole process. One, I really do now want to know whether that's the first time in pop culture someone used the phrase fuck ass. Because that's a great phrase that I've used many times, but I had no idea it came from Donnie Darko. Two, is this the only movie that has both Gyllenhaals in it?
It might be, and it was like before Maggie had done really, like, cause Jake had done, I think, October Sky and something else. Oh, he's in City Slickers.
Oh yes. Jake Gyllenhaal, most notable of City Slickers.
He is in City Slickers.
I mean, he's in that movie.
Don't at me. He's in City Slickers, but this might be Maggie's first credit.
Two other things that I realized real quick. One, Joanna, you're absolutely correct about the allure of Jenna Malone, which I was a big Jenna Malone fan anyway, just sort of in general. But great, she's I would have had a huge crush on her had I watched this movie when I was the appropriate age. And then the other thing is, it's a testament to how you really can't avoid spoilers if you want to, because I put this movie into my DVD player, Blu-ray player yesterday, and to that point, had no idea what the movie was about still. Like, I knew there was, like, a bunny, and I knew Donnie had a little sister, which they made a movie about, but I had no other idea what the hell this movie was about. I mean, I guess a time travel, because you guys told me last week.
Yeah, I'm so curious, like, if we hadn't told you this movie was about time travel... Well, I guess they talk about time travel.
Yeah, I mean, so the time travel thing, because they talk about how Grandma Death is, like, an expert on time travel. And also, like, I feel like there's a lot... What makes me curious about the director's cut is I do feel like there's a lot missing. Like, there's a lot of, like, his conversation with Noah Wiley, like, jump around a lot. And there also feels like there's a whole storyline with Drew Barrymore's character where it goes from, like, her teaching them Graham Greene to her getting fired. And I'm like, wait, what happened in between? Like...
Beth Grant, the best part of the movie, standing up at the Parent Teacher Association meeting and talking about how she is both a parent and a teacher, so she bridges the parent-teacher divide. I'm sorry. Like, everything she says is comedy gold to me in that
just
movie.
Super on the nose. I love the t-shirt she has when she does the sparkle motion thing, which is like, God is awesome.
It's
like,
yes. And all the sparkle motion stuff I think is great.
Also very much out of left field. Like, yeah. There's no, like, they mention in passing that the girls are on, like, a dance team together, but at no point do they talk about the degree of seriousness to sparkle motion.
That's kind of the joke, is that, like, Beth Grant's character takes it too seriously. And Mary McDonnell, who's a great in this movie, also, is just sort of like, what the hell's going on? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so McDonnell is just fantastic and also ageless, I just want to say. But here's the question that I never really could connect the dots. So like I get, especially now that you explain it, what the time travel stuff really means. I get all that, and I get like the correction and sort of Donnie's troubled nature being sort of a conduit through for this correction to happen. But I don't understand what the fear video has to do with it. And I don't understand some of the very specific, like religious stuff that comes from Beth Grant's character, where it's like, none of that made sense to me. Like, was that all just kind of there to set up the fact that like the Swayze's character was a total fraud?
Well, there's a God force in Donnie Darko, the more footage you add back into it.
Right, he talks... Sorry, go ahead.
We don't know the initial event that causes the splinter timeline, really. There are like some hints on it, but nothing definitive enough to get it. And then there's this whole idea of the manipulated living and the manipulated dead, which is what Joanna is saying, which is that time actually wants to fix itself. So these people start acting in the best nature of fixing the time aberration, which in the case of Patrick Swayze's character appears like justice. So the question is, you know, is there a God force that has a moral thing in the world of Donnie Darko? There's the movie leaves room for that, but it is sort of like hazy about what thematic strings are sort of left hanging in the movie from that being a bigger part.
Yeah, Donnie says something about that when he's talking to Noah Wiley. I might have spaced out when I was rewatching it the other day, but like he talks about like if God controls time, then he controls everything. Like then there's no free choice. There's all predestination.
Right.
So that's in there. But here's what I'll say. You know, as alluring as Donnie Darko is in its theatrical cut, in its weird, like, cult classic, you know, you had to be there sort of ness, Richard Kelly's subsequent works have revealed him to not be, I think, a genius or in any way in control of any kind of storytelling gift, right? Because he did Southland Tales, which is a huge mess. The Box, which is also a mess. Like those are his other two movies that he directed. He wrote some of Holes and some of Domino, but none of those movies are good. So like Richard Kelly has never like delivered on whatever promise we thought we saw in Donnie Darko. So it might, you know, knowing that might reveal like that what we thought we saw in Donnie Darko wasn't actually there. But like there are a couple things there, as Neil mentioned, like the allure of Jenna Malone. But you know, so it's like that thing where like if you see something that has imitated an original property, but you never saw the original property, and then you see the original property, and then it just seems like an imitation because you've already seen all the other knockoffs of it. Okay.
Right.
So bearing that in mind, let's say you had never seen a Jake Gyllenhaal movie and you saw Donnie Darko and you're like, man, this kid is great. Cause he is great in this movie. Like the crazy expressions he puts on his face. Like if you'd never seen Nightcrawler or a million other things, you'd be like, who is this kid? This kid is Bubble Boy and October Sky, and now he's this? Like, are you kidding me? You know? So I think that there are some, like, performances, you know, that make this movie quite special. Not necessarily from Drew Barrymore, but, you know, like, I think this movie as a discovery of some of the things that Jake Gyllenhaal can do, that's where a lot of the power is, for me anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, I think this movie wouldn't have happened if it wasn't specifically who it was and when it was, because basically Richard Kelly like got this script to Drew Barrymore, who was starting her own production company, and the first three movies on her slate were Never Been Kissed, Charlie's Angels, and this. And so this was obviously like the prestige entry of Flower Films. You could definitely see how she, you know, could come up with this, you know, young guy who had a very clear vision and this nonsense script. And, you know, obviously we're reading the cultural timeline, right? Because this movie was released at the same year as Ghost World, and they're like tonally the exact same film. Just one is sci-fi and one's a comic book adaptation tome piece. So it's like, I feel like of late 90s, early 2000s, like this sort of cynicism and these actors peaking all at the same time makes complete sense. I think if you try to, like, if you were to try to remake Donnie Darko, or in the case of S. Darko, make like a cheap knockoff of it, it's like, I wouldn't invest in that because Donnie Darko's so of a time for me. Like, I don't know if there's a time in movie going America post 9/11 where I'd want to sit down and meditate on if the timeline fixes itself in like white teenage suburbia. But for this one, I was ready for it.
And it's the beginning of this, like, thing, this time of Jenna Malone's career where she did Donnie Darko, she did Life as a House, Dangerous Life of Altar Boys, United States of Leland, and then it all sort of peaked in Saved as this sort of, like, Hot Topic, manic Hot Topic dream girl. Like, that, this was like a indie Sundance. I thought Jenna Malone was going to be something different than what she turned out to be. But it felt like the beginning of something, you know, like it felt like she was like indie Kristen Stewart at the time. And like, I don't know. It might just be like a, you had to be there thing. And that's an annoying thing. Like I've had people tell me that about movies. Like when I only saw Boogie Nights like 2 years ago and someone was like, you're not going to enjoy it as much as we all enjoyed it when we saw it. And I don't know that that's true. I loved Boogie Nights when I watched it 2 years ago. But, like, there are definitely some films where I'm like, I can't explain it to you. We had all drunk the Kool-Aid and...
Well, the culture behind this one was interesting because it's, like, right as, like, internet blogging's coming about, the first cut gutted what you needed to understand what the movie was trying to say, but was popular enough that people showed it on video and discussed it online to 3 years later make another cut. And by that time, there had already been 3 years of discussing it before we realized it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So it's like, we got to see what we wanted in this movie as like this tiny little teenager on medication, sees a crazy rabbit, time travel, water spear, craziness. And then, you know, like you did, have a correct reading of the movie that emotionally makes sense before the filmmaker came back in and George Lucas all over it and told us like the nitty gritty of what was happening and that we didn't actually see the inciting incident of the entire goddamn movie, which places a first jet engine in the wrong timeline. Like, come on.
Yeah, I guess.
Let me just read the last sentence of the director's cut, like summary, which is, and all the proper nouns are capitalized. So just like fall on your sword as you're listening to this. The manipulated dead, those who die within the tangent universe, like Frank and Gretchen, are more aware than the living, having the power to travel through time, and will set an insurance trap, not an insurance trap, but an insurance trap, a scenario which leaves the receiver no choice but to save the primary universe. I mean, like, what the hell is this movie? What is this movie?
Yeah, I guess so. My ultimate read on Donnie Darko is, as I was watching it, as an adult, I couldn't help but wonder if this is the movie that ultimately sort of exists in the gray space between actually being really complex and smart and thinking that it's complex and smart. Because I think that it definitely thinks it's smart. I'm not so sure if it is.
I agree with you, but rewatching it, I still found it entertaining. I don't find it smart.
Like, do you feel like you have like a sort of like an emotional muscle memory for it where it's like, I saw this when I was in college and it has like a special, not necessarily like a special place in my heart kind of schmaltzy thing, but like I think there is an emotional muscle memory to the way we see movies that we really loved or liked when we were younger. So I didn't have any of that. And I was just like, this is stupid.
So. The first time I realized that was when I was like 20, 21 or so, and I tried to show Labyrinth to like a guy I was dating, and he was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, oh no, you maybe have to be a certain, I mean, that's not true of everyone who sees Labyrinth, because some people see it as an adult and are like, this is magical. But like, I think everyone who sees Labyrinth as a child is like, this is great. And certain people, when they watch it as an adult, are like, what is happening?
Right.
You know, and so...
Maybe context just really matters. Because I think you could show somebody who knows what Labyrinth is and what it means to people Labyrinth, and they could be into it. But if they have no other context for it, then yeah, that's kind of a weird movie.
So yeah, Donnie Darko, maybe you had to be there. Maybe if we could maybe if we could time travel Neil back to a little over 15 years ago.
Exactly.
I really need to ask Richard Kelly now, why is this the 15th anniversary?
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't started emailing people to be like, I need to talk to Richard
Kelly.
Is he
on Twitter? Just tweet at him.
I think he follows one of my accounts. I'll have to be like, why is this the 15th year?
We're supposed to have him on Gen Pop to talk about Donnie Darko, but like, honestly, I would just spend the entire time being like, what is this movie about? Also, why is this the 15th anniversary?
Like, yeah, it's like,
no, you should have him on, but you should meet him there. Be like, knowing the facts that I do, that this is not your 15th anniversary. This is the 15th anniversary release. Who around me is manipulated dead and manipulated living? Can you see it?
What is the artifact?
Yeah, what artifact are we moving to? What portal can we get there? Does that also undo Trump? Please help us.
Neil, here's my last question about Donnie Darko, though. Like, did you know, as like sort of silly and stupid as you found the movie, or I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Those are pretty accurate.
Okay, as silly and stupid as you found the movie, did you find it creepy at all? Like the Frank character design, the like manipulated voice.
Why are you wearing that human suit?
Jake Gyllenhaal's creepy fucking face as he's like stabbing at this thing and then the light glints off it. Like, was any of that creepy?
I mean, I guess it was creepy at arm's length. So it was like, I could be like, oh, that probably creeps some people out, but it's not getting inside of me. Like, it's not under my skin.
That's what she said. Yeah.
And I am sort of a notoriously easy person to get inside with a horror movie.
I'm not touching that one. Okay.
So look, but this is one of the reasons why like I'm not a huge horror fan is because I actually do just scare easily.
Yeah.
Especially when it's there were movies that I watched as a kid like Poltergeist and Rosemary's Baby that just messed me the hell up to the point where I just couldn't watch. Like, I think it was like 2 years ago when I watched Poltergeist for the second time. Like, I just couldn't do it. So I am not like a tough person. And this movie, I could still kind of hold it off and be like, well, I get why that's supposed to be creepy, but I'm not feeling in it as much as I would other movies, I guess.
All right.
We've been spoiled with our animal monster costume people and our pitch shifted voices.
Yeah, I mean, if
Java was watching X-Men Apocalypse the other day,
you see,
you see
one guy in a bunny suit. You've seen them all at this point.
That's absolutely true.
The last little like tidbit,
Darko bit
is that Samantha Darko, of course, is played by DeVay Chase, who was the Ring Girl.
Have any of us seen Samantha Darko?
I have not seen Samantha Darko, but I get with everything in there. Like, we got the Ring Girl, the real original Samantha Darko is the Ring Girl. Let's make a horror movie about her. I mean, at least they didn't recast her. So anyway.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm curious about is like, do they do the same story over again? Just with the sister, but I don't know.
Oh my God. I was going to redo the synopsis, but it's very long. But like, there's a meteorite and there's like radiation poisoning.
What?
Oh, God. It's like the American Psycho 2 of sequels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we'll All right, let's move on.
Let's move on from this Darko situation. But Elizabeth Berkley is in Samantha Darko.
I mean, that makes it all better, obviously. Is she the Swayze of that movie?
One can only hope.
Moving on, Neil's prepared some time travel lightning round questions to bring us out.
Yes.
Because we know that this was mostly Donnie Darko focused. We promised some other time travel stuff. So Neil, let's kick it off.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? You're going to go first on these answers. So I'm going to ask your questions.
Oh, that's fine. I was just going to say that the reason why we're doing this is this lightning round is because we asked people on Twitter four questions and y'all are great, trust me. But y'all just sent us a list of things we should talk about.
That was my fault. I said questions and or things that they wanted us to talk about.
Right. They chose the latter.
They chose the latter.
So we came up with some questions that will allow us to talk about almost all of the things you guys mentioned.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
All right. No, that's a good preamble. Neil, what is your favorite time travel movie or show?
Okay, so I'm breaking this into two categories because I don't even follow my own rules. I'm doing serious and silly because I think that there's this distinct difference between movies that take time travel seriously and ones that are just ridiculous about it. And my serious one is Looper, which I thought is very well thought out. Very interesting. One thing I love about Looper is the makeup work that they did on Joe Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis, mostly on Joe Gordon-Levitt to make him look like Bruce Willis. And I always thought that's such a good, it's a rare thing to be able to get two really good actors to play, the same person in the same movie, but it's also really great if you can do a little prosthetic work and make it like look really solid. So I'm a big Looper fan, and it's, you know, Rian Johnson directing the new Star Wars movie. So if you have not seen Looper, just do it. Go see it. My silly one is Groundhog Day. Because I feel like Groundhog Day is probably the simplest setup for a time travel movie, where it's just like your day just keeps starting over and over and over again. And, it leads to all kinds of, I feel like when I saw Groundhog Day for the first time, I felt like I could be Bill Murray, where he just starts going crazy. Like he just starts doing stuff where he's like, I know that I'm just going to wake up in the same day. So let's drive off a cliff with a groundhog. So I would probably be pretty great in that scenario. I would have gone crazy quicker, but I would have a lot of fun.
Interesting. Joanna, same question. Your favorite time travel movie or show?
I just want to like respectfully.
Respectfully, disrespectfully?
No, just respectfully disagree with Neil about the prosthetic work in Looper, which I found actually very distracting.
Oh, you didn't like it? I mean,
I found it very distracting, but
it's because, Joe Gordon-Levitt, they very much de-pretty him. And
it's not that he's deep pretty. It's just hard because we know what young Bruce Willis looks like. I think that's
a good point.
That's a hard thing for me. It's sort of like, I know what young Bruce Willis looks like, and it's not Joe Gordon-Levitt with extra silly putty on his face. That being said, there's a lot of goodness. I think Looper got unfairly maligned, and I think there's a lot of goodness in Looper that, especially like a really good creepy performance from a kid. Okay. Quantum Leap is probably my favorite time travel thing. I'd say it holds up. I watched it recently. Quantum Leap still holds up. Quantum Leap, great freaking show that I watched obsessively as a kid. One of my favorite aspects of time travel is the ability to like learn more about history or like whatever. So like even though Quantum Leap was confined to the length of Dr. Sam Beckett's lifetime, it was still very interesting to me. Highlander is not a time travel show, but it also went like back in time because your lead character is immortal. That's a side cheat. But I'm just going to say that Highlander and Quantum Leap were two of my favorite shows growing up. And those were like, let's go back in time and visit history.
But if there could only be one choice, which one would you pick?
Oh boy. It's definitely Quantum Leap. And then I'm going to put a book in there, and it's a book by Connie Willis called To Say Nothing of the Dog. She wrote a more famous time travel book called The Doomsday Book, which goes back to like plague times. And this is set in a similar universe, like similar time travel technology, but they go back to right before the London Blitz, basically. And it's a mystery. It's basically, it combines like Agatha Christie, Jeeves and Wooster, Jerome K. Jerome, like all my favorite British authors, Lewis Carroll, all of this stuff. Not actually, but sort of thematically. into this like great mystery story of them trying to figure out what's going on in this certain time period. So Say Nothing, the dog, smorgasbord of
I have a question.
Britishness, yes.
If I read this book, will a jet engine fall through a portal onto my house?
No, but like the Nazis might come and blitz your house.
Because I feel like that's where Donnie Darko went wrong when he started reading that book. Anyway, sorry.
That's okay.
I can't get off the Donnie Darko thing. Apparently, that must make it a good movie. I can't
see it
stop
sticks
talking
with you.
About it.
Ugh, sticks with
stupid
you.
Richard Kelly.
My answer is going to be Back to the Future, specifically Part 2.
Oh.
Even though it's not the better movie, it is my better portrayal of time travel.
Interesting.
And Futurama, if I could pick just the episode, the late Philip J. Fry, where they can only time travel forward. So they figure out that actually all history loops, but like 6 inches lower.
I remember that episode.
And so they just keep time traveling forward. To eventually get back and reunite Fry and Leela.
I do like the time travel conceit that is often used of a person having to sneak around events we've already seen and not interact with the events we've already seen lest they disturb the timeline. So in Back to the Future 2...
I like the Splinter Trump timeline. I like the idea that like... The two things, like you're like time travel movies. Number one, let's fall in love with my mother. Number two, let's get rich on sports betting. Like, I just like that they just immediately went to like what would happen and dealt with the consequences, but still in a, you know, fun Huey Lewis way.
Yeah. But yeah, the fact that you get to see the Enchantment of the Sea dance, but like from a different angle. I mean, that's fun. We have fun. We have fun with time travel. Yeah.
We did fun. All right, next question. Mr. Neil Miller, in which movie or show is the time travel most logical and most illogical?
Right, so we're picking a most logical one and a most illogical one. My most logical, given the short amount of time that I researched what I wanted to do for this, was Star Trek 09, because I think that if you simplify things... down to it splits off, so you have a character that moves from one timeline to another timeline, and that splinters and creates a second entire timeline that has really nothing to do with the first one. So like if you think about where they've gone since then, they had old Spock in there a little bit, but they've never, like, no one tried to go back to that timeline. That timeline didn't come looking for him other than the bad guy in the first movie. So I like the kind of clean break because it's easy to follow. Then we have stuff on the illogical side, like Terminator, where everything doesn't make sense. And I think Terminator is probably one of the notoriously nonsensical time travel shows. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think it was, well, Dave is the expert, so I'm going to give my inexpert opinion first. I think it was sensical until it wasn't.
The first one was kind of sensical, and then the second one was like, wait, what?
It's sensical until they just couldn't help themselves. They just... kept on fucking with the timeline. Dave?
The first three movies all make sense if you assume they're standalone movies. The fourth movie doesn't have any time travel. The fifth movie wants you to assume things which you never had to assume. But then once you start assuming those things and go back and look at the whole franchise, it all falls apart.
Wait, the fifth one is with Emilia Clarke and her bad accent, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So, guys, did you know that Matt Smith in Terminator Genesis is not from any timeline that we see in the movie Terminator Genesis? He's from a completely other timeline that has watched all the other Skynets fail, and he jumps back to do that whole thing with John at the end of Terminator. So it's interesting because the last movie tries to unify everything, and by doing that, it all like falls apart.
You're blowing my mind, man. You're blowing my mind.
I've
never seen Terminator 4 or 3 or 5. actually. So I've never seen the show, even though I heard it was pretty good, Sarah Connor Chronicles. So I only live in a world of good Terminator movies.
Well, here's the thing about the second Terminator movie. Cyberdyne is a red herring because Cyberdyne just accelerates Skynet's being built because they have the chip and the hand from the old Terminator. But they blow up Cyberdyne. They're like, I've stopped Judgment Day. No, no, you haven't. You just stopped your fuck up from leaving the thing in the press. Like, she's driving off, giving this monologue that we're all supposed to feel good, looking at lines on the streets. But no, no, that's not what happened. You did not stop Judgment Day. But that's what 3's about.
But you just blew my mind letting me know that Terminator 4 has no time travel in it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's the Christian Bale one. It does have a really cool gas station explosion, though.
That's the, oh, good for you, right?
I will
Anton
say this.
Yelchin, my boy. All right.
So sometimes I wonder, like, the explanation of, like, Matt Smith's character in Terminator 5, where it's like, oh, well, he's from a different timeline. I always am very skeptical of explanations like that because it's like, yeah, but like, was that what they planned going into it? Or did they just make up some bullshit afterward when none of it made sense?
I mean,
well, this was from a pre-release, but released after it was released interview with, the producers with Crave Online is where they say that Skynet is not from that timeline. It is the understanding that for Skynet finally realizing I can't just wipe out humans, I need to have the best weapons the human have, and that's John. So they straight up said that's what we're planning. The Terminator Genesis, or the new Terminator franchise that Genesis halted by failing, was going to explain more about this multiple timeline theory. But it's just a way of so like, it's really easy to think with the original Terminator. So Neil, let's just think logically.
Okay.
In the original Terminator, Kyle Reese comes back and impregnates Sarah Connor with John Connor, which he's always done, and defends her from a Terminator from the future. So that
yes.
means that there's, yeah, that means that there's a, how did the Kyle Reese know to go back to that specific time if they could send the Terminators to any time, unless there was a timeline where Sarah Connor died, or unless he actually saw the Terminator go back? And in the first timeline, when there isn't even a reason to kill John Connor, does Kyle Reese get sent back? Or does John Connor grow up in the prime timeline with a completely different dad? There's so many assumptions for the first premise to work that every movie you stack on top of that is adding at least two timelines onto it, which then when you try to be like, oh no, these are all one unified multiverse, just sort of breaks it apart.
Kyle Reese in the first movie, by the way, sidebar, my friend and I have joked about starting a Michael Biehn podcast called Biehn There, Done That. Anyway, Michael Biehn is the actor who plays Kyle Reese. Kyle Reese in the first movie, does he know that he's John Connor's father when he goes back in time?
No, but John...
John, like, incepts him with, like, isn't my mom pretty? Don't you want to go fuck her and make
given
me?
And has given him this picture
yeah.
to, like, obsess over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, he set it up, but...
But Kyle doesn't know. Okay. So, like,
well,
I feel like
that,
John...
That's also a thing they explore in the fourth one, because Anton Yelchin plays Kyle Reese. The fourth one is
and
about
Christian Bale can't...
Future.
Can't tell him.
It does involve time travel, because it's about the future and them trying to send Kyle Reese back.
But they never actually do it?
No, they do it. They succeed in the end, right?
I don't think they send him back in the end, no. So something accelerates the development of the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminators
right.
because they're suddenly there, but there's no... Do they actually get to the time portal?
They
I think
do.
The first time we see the time portal is in Genesis.
Does.
But so what I'm saying, okay, maybe we should have just done a Terminator episode, but what I'm saying before we should probably move on is that I feel like the reason that Kyle Reese goes back to that time to stop the Terminator is because John wanted it back at that time because he knows that that's when he was born. Like, Kyle Reese went back to that time because Kyle Reese has always gone back to that time.
No, but why did the Terminator go back to that time?
To stop Kyle Reese from putting John Connor seeds inside Sarah Connor.
So you're okay, but why did the first Kyle Reese go back to have that first Terminator go back after him?
He went back to impregnate Sarah Connor.
Okay, but then who sent him?
Well, yeah, that's the question. That's the loop.
Well, okay.
That's the real question is, like, how can Kyle Reese go back to create John Connor if there never was a John Connor to send Kyle Reese back to create John Connor?
No, there was always a John Connor that took his mother's maiden name. There was just a different father. Kyle Reese doesn't have to be the... He's not a Superman.
Kyle Reese definitely has to be the father. Okay, I feel like we're in the weeds. No.
John Connor sends Kyle Reese back to defend his mother from a Terminator that has been sent back because she fathers the leader of the Resistance, which presupposes, in the first timeline, he accidentally becomes the leader of the human Resistance. And his father is not Kyle Reese.
I thought John Connor knew that Kyle Reese was his father, and that's why he gave him the photo of his mom to be like, isn't she pretty? I need you to go back and have sex with her because you're my dad.
Yes, which is why the Terminator 1984 takes place on the, at minimum, the fourth iteration of the Terminator timeline.
Okay, I'm going to skip forward and answer my question. I think we need to get off Terminator.
So
okay.
To remind everybody, the question was, in which movie or show is the time travel most logical and most illogical?
Okay.
Joanna Robbins.
I think my answer is like a good actually piggyback off of this Terminator Mishigas, because my answer is Doctor Who, just because like I find the technology very simple. There's a freaking police box that travels through time and space because there are aliens who know how to do this. Okay. The problem is when you try to serialize Doctor Who. When Doctor Who was like standalone adventures and we reboot the lead actor and we reboot the companions and just to keep it fresh and going. When Stephen Moffat gets his, well, you know, Russell T. Davies did it too, the showrunner, but especially when Stephen Moffat gets his sticky little fingers all over the Doctor Who franchise and tries to like make everything all timey-wimey loopy, like, oh, it's all related, River Song, Meadow, Melody, blah, 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 Amy Pond's kid is Doctor's girlfriend. It's awful. It's very bad. So what I'm just saying is like Terminator, like you're trying to have too much of a good thing. Like you need to, you know, keep it simple, stupid and trying when you have something like Terminator, like I've seen charts that Dave has sent me of Terminator Genesis to try to make sense of Terminator Genesis. I've also seen charts that people have made to try to make sense of the Doctor Who River Song relationship. When River Song first shows up, when Stephen Moffat was not the showrunner, when he just wrote River Song as a character who like knew the Doctor from the future, and this is where he was meeting her for the first time, it was great. Oh man, it was great. And this is the end of her timeline, but the beginning of his, and they're having their love affair in reverse, and it's so great. And then when he tried to actually explore it, it didn't make any sense. And so you just need to like have a light touch, I think, when it comes to time travel. The most illogical, my illogical answer, is Peggy Sue Got Married, because literally Kathleen Turner faints and then like later faints again. And that's how time travel works in that movie. Okay.
Nice. All right. I'm going to also go quickly here because we're running long. I'm going to say the most logical, a Primer has a nice looping time travel thing, but I'm going to go with Christopher Nolan's Interstellar because he gets sucked into a black hole and just sees color and time and his brain processes it as a never-ending bookshelf. And yeah, why wouldn't you see information in color as a never-ending bookshelf? And he can communicate with his daughter. That seems as much as anybody could possibly know about black hole science. Seems fine to me. And then most illogical, Austin Powers Goldmember. Cause they're like, they jump into a spiral and meet their father. And like, that's just a whole bunch of paradoxes. And Beyonce's there.
Yeah.
Beyonce belongs in our time, if we know anything. All right. I'm going to skip to the one that I'm really excited about. Neil, which movie or show would be improved with the addition of time travel?
I will say that I may have misunderstood this question that I wrote. the show itself doesn't need the time travel within the show. We need time travel to go back and fix the show. And that is...
Oh, really?
Yes. And that is True Detective. We need time travel to go back and fix True Detective season 2.
Okay, I feel like you broke the rules, but I support it because you've angered Dave in the process. So it's all worth it.
It wasn't that bad.
It was pretty bad. Okay.
I mean,
drugged out or orgy escape scene. Come on.
There's sure.
Redheaded stepchild.
My answer is this. There's some indication that Riverdale might end this season with zombies. So I'm going to throw some time travel in there too. Why not? Why not send the characters of Riverdale back to the actual 50s? There was a 50s fantasy sequence, but that doesn't count. Actual 50s time travel. Peggy Sue got married, but for Riverdale. Okay.
Nice.
And I'm going to go with Stranger Things because sort of the Montauk Project conspiracy theory that the Stranger Things was originally based on was entirely based around the U.S. government trying to create a permanent time loop between the 30s and the 80s. I think it would be interesting if Stranger Things, you know, expanded outside of giant monsters into time travel. And then instead of going forward, which people would think would be easy because it's an 80s show and we could, you know, send them into a believable future, send them back, make it even Stranger Things. I want it. I want it back.
Okay.
All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for time travel. Next week, though, we're not straying too far off the mark. Mr. Neil Miller, what do we have going on?
Yes, next week, this week we were doing Through the Portal, and next week we are doing Through the Portal Part 2, only we're doing different kinds of portals. This week we went through the portal in time. Next week we are going multiverse, and we are actually going to have a special guest on next week to talk about Rick and Morty and the big April 1st Rick and Morty rollout and what we expect for season 3 when it shows up later this summer. And I think it's going to be a little fun little Rick and Morty episode that a lot of folks have been secretly hoping for, I'm sure.
Yay, multiversal party time. So yeah, until next week, definitely check out that Rick and Morty season 3 episode 1. Probably also check out the first 2 seasons of Rick and Morty, why not? Because it's all kind of crazy and connected and, you know, a fun Justin Roiland, Dan Harmon property. But yeah, guys, I feel like we've been through our own little time wormhole discussing Donnie Darko and whatnot. Man, this transition is labored. Let's just go into it. Neil Miller, where could people find more of your work on the internet?
You can obviously get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where sometimes I write words. You can get me on Twitter at Rejects, where I write more words, probably. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers and email us if you have questions or Rick and Morty comments for next week at stormofspoilers@gmail.com, and make sure to subscribe to One Perfect Pod, which is the other show which last week completed the triangle of Storm of Spoilers multiverseness and joined the Joannaverse, with a really fun episode where Joanna and I talked about the Batgirl news,
where we accurately fan casted the Batgirl movie.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. Just so you know, guys, if I were to pick one fictional character to travel through time with, it would be Daniel Faraday from Lost. Over nice. To you, Dave Gonzalez.
Oh, man, I guess I'd pick Doctor Who. You could find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find the rest of my podcast work at fightinginthewarroom.com, including back episodes of this show, which have been super fun since they're not all about Game of Thrones anymore. Yeah, until next week, guys, stay clear of your artifact lest you become manipulated living.
A fucking movie. All right. Wabba-labba-dab, dab. I don't give a fuck. Let's dance, bitch. Do the get swifty.
Yeah.
Someday we will die. Let's party tonight.
Riggity, riggity, wreck, sons.
Let's get wrecked all night.
Do you know what wubba lubba dub dub means?
Wubba lubba dub dub.
In my people's tongue, it means
I don't give a fuck.
I am in great
pain. Let's dance, bitch.
Please help me.
To the rain.